Like Paul, who was boasting about the Corinthians, to Titus, I would like to boast about our school. Not to boast about what you can see, but about what, with God's help, you will see later. And I'm not talking about buildings or equipment, but I'm talking about the results that we see in our students. In 1903, a little book was published, and I left it in the back there. I'm going to go grab it. Thank you. This one right here, this little book is called Education. This book was published, as I said, in 1903, a book written for parents and for teachers. And it became a mission guide for Seventh-day Adventist education. And it's had a good effect. Today, after using the principles that we gleaned from that book, the Seventh-day Adventist Church operates over 7,000 schools, about 7,000 schools worldwide. You know, the United Nations tells us that there are 228 countries on this earth. The Seventh-day Adventist Church operates in 202 of those countries. We use 885 different languages in our church, our school, and our publishing work. Using this model has worked pretty well for us. I know that there are other models that are working their way into our educational system, but I would like to boast about this 1903 version because that is the one that we are using here. Before I do any more boasting, I'd like to ask you a question first. What do you see, you parents, you grandparents, what do you see as being the purpose of education? What is the primary goal that you have for your child or your grandchild that you want to see them attain through education? Is it a high GPA? Is it an advanced degree? Is a good-paying job at the end of it all? Certainly, the public school system can provide you with those things. Unless you believe, as that little book teaches, that worldly ideas of education take an approach that are too narrow and too low. That our children need a broader scope and a higher aim, a higher purpose to reach for. True education is more than just following a certain line of study. It has to do with the development of the whole being, preparing a student for life not only in this world, but for life in the next world. The scriptures point us to the direction of true education. If you'd like to, you can read with me in Proverbs, the second chapter. Starting in verse 1, Proverbs 2, verse 1. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He holds victory in store for those for the upright. He is a shield for those whose walk is blameless. For he guards the course of the just and protects the way of his faithful ones. Then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. An education that excludes the source of wisdom and knowledge is pathetic. It pathetically limits the heights that a student can attain. Keeping our priorities straight makes a great difference. Christ himself told us to seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to us as well. If our priority is to build a sound, knowledgeable Christian who is kind, who is thoughtful, who is attentive to his or her teacher, who is helpful to other students, then what do you get? You have a student then who is anxious to learn, one who completes their assignments. In other words, you get a very good student. Then the GPA, the degree, the job, all those things will follow after and flow from that. Building that sound, knowledgeable Christian is a responsibility of the parents, of the family, of the church, and of the teachers. We all have a share in it. To get the best results, you need good people in the home and in the church and in the school who are all committed to that same goal. One of the principles that we strive to achieve that we gleaned from this book is an encouragement that comes to teachers. So I'll just speak to our teachers there for a second. Teachers, you are called to bind these children to your heart. And I know as I watch you that that's just exactly what you're trying to do, and it is what you do. This is, for a teacher, the very first work, because children respond to love, and they respond to genuine concern. Like a good parent, teachers should consider that the trust that's placed in them by the students is one that they never are completely released from. When hearts are bound together, they're bound together in two directions. Not only the students towards the teachers, but the teachers towards the students. I had a friend who was a teacher who said, you know, it's very hard to be attached to students because at the end of the school year, they leave you and it just breaks your heart. And, you know, let it go ahead because it's all right. You have permission to love these children forever. It's all right. You just go ahead. Because they're going to love you forever. They're going to love the teachers who have loved them. It's just what we do. We all know that life will not be stopped from bringing the many responsibilities onto these children that it brings as they grow up. A good teacher is an influence both to the child who is in their classroom and to that child years later that has loved that teacher and been loved by them. That teacher is an influence on their character. They have an ability to affect that character as that child is taking on these responsibilities in life. So here's where I get to boast. We may not yet have all the facilities that we are working hard to build, but we do possess this focus of building both good and strong characters in our students. It starts with kindergarten, and it goes right on through to eighth grade. I have a friend, someone I've known for 25 years, and so he doesn't have to exaggerate to be able to communicate with me. We can speak pretty clearly. And he works right now, he's working with interns from the medical school at Loma Linda University. I won't say in where and in what capacity he's working with them to protect his confidence, but he's working in a situation where if they possessed a missionary heart, that missionary heart would be able to flourish. It could show itself. But he tells me that the current class of medical students there at Loma Linda are the most arrogant, conceited group of people he has ever met in his life. I was shocked, really. He's horribly disappointed, he said. Well, me too. You know, I've read a lot about the lives of the people who founded Loma Linda University. I know the purpose that it was founded for, the intention, the reason our denomination got into the medical work in the first place, and so there's nothing wrong with having an expectation that there would be a missionary heart instilled in those students. I don't know anyone there, but I'm disappointed with the report that I hear. This is a selfish world. Humans are selfish beings. That is why the Lord tells us to train a child in the way they should go, not in the way that our natural inclinations take us. In God's plan, this world has a place for every person, every single one of us. Let me just quickly read to you something on that. It comes from Colossians chapter 3, verses 23 and 24, where it says, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving." We do not advocate academic competition amongst our students here. They are not rivals, they are friends. They help one another. Each one is encouraged to develop the talents that God has given to that child to the utmost. We want them to see that this goal is not, that their goal, excuse me, is not selfish ambition, but to take their place, their specific, unique place in service for Christ. The foundation for this character that we seek to instill in them is the same one that has been laid before every generation in the Christian era. You can read it with me if you like. It's found in Luke, the 10th chapter, starting with verse 25. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" he answered. "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this, and you will live." What the man speaking to Jesus there was quoting was a reflection of God's own character, which is love. Love that is demonstrated to God, love that is demonstrated to our neighbors, are the principles on which God's divine law is built. Love for God, love for humanity. Individuals, homes, societies are kept safe when they keep within it. That is our goal. That is what we are all about. May the grace of God fill us with that love. May His grace be poured out on our students, on their families, on our teachers, and upon our church to help us together, to make us competent to be able to build young people for heaven.